Hi folks, this is Lauren Hutt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 27. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that what I talk about here is my opinion from my experience and so on with guitars, amps, and effects. And got some news for you this week. I've opened up a WordPress blog on the website, so basically any the episodes will be published on the blog. It's at theguitarpodcast.net/blog, or just go to the website and click on the blog. It'll take you right there. I've uploaded all the episodes to the blog so that you can go back and look through old episodes there and comment and everything, and I'll be notified as soon as you comment if you have a question or whatever through there. And we can open up a dialogue right there on the blog. If you have a direct question for me, just email me directly at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Otherwise, it'd be really cool to have a discussion right there on the blog. We're on episode 27, but all the other episodes are already up. So if you wanted to go back in and comment and open a discussion there, that'd be really cool. So I got an email from Rick who says, I know some scales and I can play those scales in the key. I can only improvise using those scales. My vocabulary is limited to those scales I know. Knowing how to use the scales I know well and learning how to incorporate new scales would be a big help to me. A lot of mid-range guitarists can use help with this. I can memorize new scales but not sure what to do with them, so I fall back on the tried and true. So what one person would call style, I would call boring. So I kind of know where he's coming from there. It sounds to me like Rick is just learning a new scale and going up and down the scale and in different modal positions on the fretboard, kind of looking at it as a more scientific way of looking at it overall. That, okay, I know all these notes and all these patterns and something cool and musical should come from this. Now, I think what Rick is running into is that music isn't all technical and scientific necessarily. There's a lot of emotion in there, melody and embellishment, and rule breaking for that matter. You know, just to really go off the deep end there, that being a lot of great songs, they're totally breaking rules as far as scales are concerned. They're just doing whatever sounds cool. And I guess what it comes down to for me is the scales are the overall map of all the notes that can be used in a key or over a certain chord. And licks are what gets you where you want to go. Licks give you the melody. They give you a phrase. They give you something tangible, something for someone to turn their head or cock their head sideways. Ooh, wow, that sounds really cool with that chord. So I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, all these scales, but the licks are what's really important. So I would advise you to learn a lot of licks and then incorporate those in the scales you already know. Find those licks in the scales and then what licks work with specific chords, because then you start playing, you know, like chordal melody or in modes or say like if you're playing in blues, you play the G7 chord. You could play G minor pentatonic there if you want to. It'll work. But you're limiting yourself to five notes. But the thing is, with that, you could just go da 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 ding da ding, you know, and you know, that's really pretty boring. It's just going right up the scale. And as Rick says, it's boring. What you need to do is find all the licks in that scale that really suit your playing, what you like to hear, what you want people to hear from you. I mean, you could copy all these other guitar players' licks and make them your own or sound just like them. I mean, that's really up to you, what you want to be as a guitar player, what you want people to perceive you or think of you whenever you're playing. You know, that's the key. Learn a bunch of licks in all these different scales over these different chords. So back to G7. Say we're playing the first that first chord, the one chord on G blues, and you're playing a G7. You could play that pentatonic scale, or you could play in the key of C. That would be, if you're playing in the key of C, you'd be playing in, say, G Mixolydian. Now then, you're thinking in that pattern there, that map of those notes in that position, find the licks that work for you. You're not looking at, oh, all these notes, you're looking at the licks. Or what you could do is say, I know licks in this pattern. Find that pattern that works on the fretboard within the key of C. Because essentially that's what you're doing, is you're playing G7, you're playing leads in C. And say then when you go to the C7, you play G Dorian, but C7 is actually the key of F. So either you could play in G Dorian right there in the third position, find the licks that work for you there, which there should be quite a few right there that work, because that's a really, it blends really well with the, I mean, you can overlap the G minor pentatonic scale right over top of that, and you see how everything matches up. Or then again, you could just move it around to wherever, and you can get into, as long as you're in the key of F. But it comes back to thinking about the licks, things that are catchy. So think of your favorite guitar players and licks that they use that really kind of stand out, or just, you don't try to find the most complicated Joe Satriani or Steve Vai lick and go for that and try to use that in, say, you know, a regular blues song, because, well, you know, it may not work, because where they were using that lick might not be a blues song. I would say, you know, starting out with someone like, I don't know, Slash or Clapton, because it's basic, they're blues. Or Hendrix. I mean, there are a lot of guitar players out there where it's really nice and easy to pick apart what they're doing and really get a lot of good licks that can be converted into whatever speed. And essentially what I'm getting at is, you know the scales, that's great. Learn a bunch of licks. Get the licks down. Every guitar magazine you pick up will have sections in them where they show licks that people are using. You know, like Fret Prince in Vintage Guitar Magazine. He breaks down riffs and lead figures and such. You know, you could take those. Even if you're not playing them the same way that the original guitar player played them, or over the same stuff. I mean, look at, say they're playing over a C chord and they're playing, you know, this lick. Look at, analyze how they're using that lick within the key and over a chord or a chord progression. Now then, you know, back to, say, the G blues, when you play that D7, you play in G Ionian, which is basically, you know, G major, because D7 is right in G major scale. And you can play, you know, you can basically, you move whatever you were using in the F scale up a whole step. You could do that, or stay right in that third position and play G Ionian. So it's really up to you if you want to, you know, if you want to do that. But I have to say, I'm trying to get you away from thinking about the key quite so much, because I think you might be overthinking what's going on within the key, and you're seeing all these notes. What do I do with all these notes? Because I just, you know, you're just playing Do Re Mi Fa Sol La Ti Do over and backwards on down, and it may sound mechanical and boring and not melodic, and that's what you want to be. You want to be melodic. You want it to you know, take the listener on a musical journey, you know, take their ear on a journey that covers different emotions and things like that, and a straight scale is not going to do it. I remember reading an article with Jerry Cantrell. And they were asking him about his practice regime and how he used to go through scales, and it's like he just threw it out. He was done with it. He said, I wasn't, you know, yeah, sure, you get some proficiency and you know your fretboard, But at some point, you have to be melodic. You have to tell a story with a song or with a solo. It has to really take the person on a musical journey. So what he was doing was he would focus on licks and new melodies within those scales, but how it fits in a song, because the song is really what's most important. If your solo, and this is just a personal opinion of mine, and I'm sure many people would agree with me, but if your guitar solo takes away from the song, your guitar solo doesn't fit. It shouldn't be there. It shouldn't be done that way. I know in the 90s, recording studios of the A&R guys, I mean, they all pushed to get rid of the guitar solo. Nirvana came out and there were almost never any solos. And it just basically killed the solo in modern rock and alternative rock. You just didn't hear it. And it's coming back. Although it never went away with metal or speed metal or death metal or whatever. And certainly not with country and jazz and blues. But as far as popular rock in the 90s, and it's still a lot today, where they've killed off that guitar solo. But I think it may have been, and I was a guy who was trying to be a shredder back in the late 80s and early 90s, but I think it's probably a good thing that they killed it off, because it was getting ridiculous. Guitar solos didn't connect with the rest of the song. It was like, well, where's this coming from? This song is taking me here, and I'm feeling this and this and this, and all of a sudden, they force this guitar solo in there. It has to be there, you know? They're sticking with this plan of intro, verse, chorus, verse, bridge, solo, chorus, outro, you know? And sometimes they're forcing these bridges in there, and we can talk about songwriting. I mean, I'm not a guru on songwriting, but I know what good plans are for making a song, and that you need to let the song tell you where it needs to go. Don't force a bridge in there or force a solo in there. But that's what they were doing in the late 80s and early 90s, was forcing a guitar solo in there, and it just was, in a lot of ways, it wasn't working. It didn't need to be there, or the guitar solo could have been a whole lot less. And I'll reference a very good example of a guitar solo that was a lot less than what it could have been. If you listen to Ain't Talking About Love by Van Halen, Eddie Van Halen is a guitar player, and he's a very well world-renowned guitar player, I might add. He's just amazing. At one time, he was considered one of the best in the world, and he's very innovative and just amazing. And it's really cool rhythm and everything. It's just a rocking tune. And it gets the guitar solo, and you can kind of expect him just to use a million notes and in a very short period of time and tap it out and use all kinds of crazy stuff. And really, he just makes a really nice melodic solo. And he doesn't force his guitar solo on you. It's just nice and melodic, and it just goes right back into the song, and it blends well with the song. And he was, you know, from me just listening and not reading an article about him, his approach to that song, he stayed within the parameters of what was needed for the song, instead of going, hey, look at me, I'm so awesome, and started playing a million notes. You know, I think that's a really good example of a great guitar player showing a lot of restraint and putting the song before himself, which I think is awesome. But as the 80s rolled on, people weren't thinking that way. They were making all kinds of crazy solos, and just, it was just a bit ridiculous. So when Nirvana came around, and I mean, their first hit, there was a guitar solo, but all it did was emulate the vocal melody for the verse with a heavy chorus that was really gargly. It sounded like it was underwater, but it was still cool. He still did a guitar solo, but it fit the song. It stayed within the song. And I'm sure nobody's going to compare Kurt Cobain to Eddie Van Halen or Slash or Slowhand or anybody like that. You know, he stayed within the song. He wasn't being ridiculous. He wasn't putting his own guitar playing ahead of the song. But if you listen to the rest of that album, Nevermind, You rarely hear any guitar solos. It's very, very few and far between that there's a guitar solo. And when he does, it's fairly simple. Then years after that on the radio, after 1991, and the grunge and alternative rock just kind of swept the nation, most of those bands, most of those songs didn't have guitar solos. And they, you know, the industry pretty much killed them off as far as in popular rock. And like I said, it kind of needed to be done, but I think it's coming back in a way. I mean, Jerry Cantrell has always had them. And I think, you know, that his were always really fairly memorable and really nice. He was always playing within the song. It wasn't like, oh, look at me, you know. If you listen to Facelift or Dirt or Jar of Flies or any of those, that early material, like within the first 5 years, you know, that's basically what I listen to. I don't listen to much of the new stuff. I'm too big of a Lane Staley fan. That guy had such a monster voice. Just an amazing, amazing talent. You know, Jerry, he really has a nice, soulful, bluesy feel to his guitar solos. They're very hummable, which I think is very important. But then he plays some nice, quick licks that are like, hey, they tell you, you know, the guy has chops. He can really move on there, but he's staying within the song. And I'd suggest, Rick, if you like Alice in Chains, I'd do a deep study of Jerry Cantrell. Because he goes all over the place with that. And Slash, too. You know, I think one of the most perfect guitar solos is November Rain. It's one of the most memorable guitar solos. And, I mean, I always loved Sweet Child of Mine. How there were a lot of guitar solos in there. It was really nice and melodic and everything. But whenever it came around, when they came back out with the Use Your Illusion CDs, and November Rain came along, it sounded to me like he took that concept from Sweet Child of Mine and applied it in a more mature fashion to November Rain. And it's, I'd say it's like the, as far as a guitar solo, it's the perfect ballad. Perfect rock ballad guitar solo. A lot of energy and emotion and you know, you listen to it, he's sticking with just a few notes there, but he's telling you a lot with those few notes. It's really, really cool. And it's not until near the end he starts moving a little quicker and a little quicker and revealing a little bit more of his skill and everything. But the way he's revealing it, it's emotional. It's within the song, and the energy of the song is increasing, and it's just getting more and more powerful. And just, it's perfect. It's great. And, you know, that's where you want to be with your guitar solos. In my opinion, you want to play within the song. Of course, within the key. Keep that stuff in mind. Learn a bunch of licks from guys you really respect, you really like. Don't try to go too crazy with it, you know, and be too fast, because that's where we all got derailed. Because we just tried to do too much. It's like, oh, look at me, I can play so fast. But it doesn't have anything to do with what's going on with the song. I hope that helps. If you have any follow-up questions, go ahead and go to the blog. It'll be episode 27 on the blog. And just, let's start a discussion there about it. I'm glad to hear feedback and you know, you all can talk there. And I mean, it's a great place to do it. I'm probably gonna post some links there to the November Rain video where you can see what I'm talking about with Slash, and some maybe even a poor example of where a guitar solo didn't belong. You know, you got to keep that in mind, because what's really important is the song. The song always comes first. If the listener is distracted by a guitar solo, it shouldn't be there, or it should have been done differently. So learn some licks, learn a lot of licks, and figure out where those licks fit in the keys that you know. And keep it simple at first, and build it up. And like I've said in other episodes where I say record a riff and start and play with yourself. Start leading over it. If you have a looping pedal, that's awesome. It's really easy to do it that way, or record it on your boombox or your computer or whatever, on GarageBand. I don't care how you do it, just do it. Or have a buddy come over, you know, get together with a friend, you know, play rhythms and do a study with somebody else, because that's very helpful, because you have immediate feedback from somebody sitting right across from you that has the same kind of a goal. You know, when I was growing up, I played with a guy down the road who was really, really good, and we'd sit around and we'd play and go back and forth like that and kind of get some feedback from each other, and you'd have immediate feedback, and that's really, really good. And without that, I don't think I would have gotten, you know, gotten to be as good as I did. And I think without that interaction, I wouldn't have, that interaction really kind of fed and drove me on. You know, I'd play with him, and I'd go home, and I'd think about what we did and how what I was doing, what I was doing right, what I was doing wrong. You know, things that he was saying about my guitar playing or the solos or whatever. Should it be more aggressive? I was kind of guilty of being a little too romantic in my leads. I'm much better legato lead player, as far as like a shredder type of guy. If I could actually classify myself as a shredder type, is I don't know that I'm good enough to be in that class. I remember him telling me that, you know, quit playing so pretty, be aggressive. And I don't know if it really wasn't quite in my nature as a guitar player to be that aggressive with my solos. My riffs and stuff, they'd be real aggressive and, something you listen to before a football game or whatever. Like, yeah, let's go. But then it came to my solo, and it'd be nice and melodic and pretty and just kind of flowy. And maybe that's an exact perfect example of where the solo doesn't necessarily fit the song. So I probably should have just stuck to just riffing and let my buddy do all the soloing over it. I mean, he was a much better soloist than I was. And that was pretty good, but this guy, pretty amazing. Anyway, I really hope that helps. And again, if you have any direct questions to me, for me, email me at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Go ahead and discuss things on the blog, theguitarpodcast.net/blog, or go to theguitarpodcast.net and click on the blog link. Also, join us on Facebook. You know, follow us on Facebook. I'm not doing any Twitter stuff. I think I'm just more of a Facebook kind of a guy, I guess. I think it just fits better. Also, go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for instant email notifications. I'll let you know when a new episode comes out. I'll also post when a new episode is on Facebook, so you can follow me there. You'll get notifications there. But, you know, what better than to get one in your inbox that just says, hey, episode 27 is out. We're talking about scales and improv and lead licks and such. So, you know, I highly suggest doing it that way. Also, if you're subscribing to the Guitar Podcast on iTunes or Zune or whatever, put some feedback up there for me. Get, you know, increase the rating. It'll help the whole project, really, for everybody. Because the more people we have in discussions and so on, the better it is for everybody. Because I want to build a community here around the podcast where we're all discussing the topics. And if you disagree with me, that is great. And I'm sure there will be some disagreements because we're guitar players and we all kind of see things through our own eyes. I'm definitely guilty of being, what's the best way? I'll just say it. Slightly egotistical and sometimes a diva, a little emotional about things, especially when it comes to guitar or playing guitar, being in a you know, my position in a band, or, you know, maybe putting a little too much importance on my role. And I know that's just kind of how we are as guitar players. You know, the old joke, how many guitar players does it take to change a light bulb? I mean, put in whatever number. If you're going to say 5, 6, 10, or whatever, you're going to say, if it's 10, you say 1 to change the light bulb, and 9 others to say, I could do it better than that. So, you know, I know how we are. We're going to disagree, and we're going to agree. But the thing is that we have the discussion to open up our minds to things. And I'm guilty of being a little too stubborn in my past, not to open up my mind to others' suggestions and such. So this will help me too. So anyway, like I said, follow us on the on Facebook, and sign up for instant notifications by email. And I promise not to spam you or anything, or sell emails. I'm not doing that. This is just to let you know what cool things are happening with the guitar podcast. And get on the blog, check it out, start chiming in there. Hey, so that pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Please chime in with comments and questions to info@theguitarpodcast.net or on the blog. And I'll either reply back by email or right on the blog. This is Lauren Hunt signing off for the Guitar Podcast.